The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Unpost, where giving is made easy with one for all gift cards. Unpost, do more.
Moving on, one of our own, so to speak, is dropping into Ireland today and dropping out tomorrow. He's sitting across from me now. He has a guitar there. I don't know if he's going to play it or not, but we'll see how things develop. He also released this week the video DVD of his latest musical contribution, High Hopes. Glenn Hansard, good morning to you.
How are you, Marion? How's it going?
How's it going for you?
Yeah, great. Yeah, great. I'm just, I was in Miami. I've been on tour with this Eddie Vedder, singer from Pearl Jam, and been touring through the States with him. And we finished up in Tampa like 2 days ago or the night before last. And man, coming back was intense. The weather shifted, didn't it?
And where are you off to tomorrow?
Off to Amsterdam. I got a gig there tomorrow night, and then Berlin, Frankfurt. You know, just about a week and a half coming through Belfast, then into Dublin, and then that's 7 months of touring. Then yeah. Finished.
Where is home now?
Dublin.
Is it?
Ah, yeah. Always, yeah. I mean, I was living in New York for a little bit, and I was renting a place on Bleecker Street, on this great street, and it was great, really amazing time there. But the rent over there is just insane. And being a person who travels a lot, you're paying rent on a place and you're like never in it.
what was the rent?
It was nuts. It was like, I think it worked out. So, I mean, it's like, I don't even want to say it's hard. No, it's insulting. I mean, it was like, because it was one of those things where you're like, you're going to go stay there for a bit, and one of your mates goes, well, I'm leaving my place. And then before you know it, you're like, you know, so it was like $3,000 a month or something. It was like awful, you know.
Anyway, just to come back to High Hopes, yeah. you went out to Ballymun.
Well, yeah. Ballymun's disappearing, and I grew up there, and I just wanted to go back and just, you know, first of all, I just wanted to go back anyway and see it. So I had a little bit of time, and I was like, I'm going to go back and just go hang out, see a few mates. And then we went, and we said, you know what, I'll bring up the guitar, bring up the camera, and we'll just hang out for the day, see if we get out, and if it works, great. If it doesn't, that's totally cool too. So we went up and we just hung out. And of course, when you go up and you're open to the moment, stuff happens. And before you know it, you've got, you know, documentary footage of a day hanging out. We went into the shopping centre and we went busking in Ballymun Shopping. Now, if you had said to me when I was a kid, would you ever go busking in Ballymun Shopping? I was like, you know, not a chance. You know, because you'd be terrified of getting your head kicked in. But no, we all went up and we had a great time. We went in and sang a few songs, and loads of the kids from the Recco in Ballyar came out, and they all sang songs, and we filmed it all. And so hopefully, you know, one day we'll be able to put it all out. But just for now, it's just a video to the song.
No, it looks terrific. The kids were obviously having a ball.
Oh, thanks.
You went into the school, obviously, as well.
Went into the school, yeah, into the old primary, the Holy Spirit. And just, you know, again, just to sort of go in and hang out with the lads. I remember when we won the Oscar, the lads were like, would you think you might come up and come visit the school? And of course we did. And what an amazing day. They taught the lads a frame song, Star Star, and the lads all in the school sort of sang the song back to us. And it was just such an amazing experience. And I remember as a kid myself, you know, the Sam Maguire came by 1 year. And it was such a big deal for us. I just remember that this, like, you know, we're getting off class today because this is the Sam Maguire's coming through. And I remember Christy Moore came up when we were kids as well. And it was such an amazing day. And it just felt, for me, it felt kind of just brilliant to be able to come up and spend the day with the lads and just sing the song with them over and over and over. And we got them up to, we got a load of them into Vicar Street last time we were playing, to get up and sing with us as well. So it was a lovely, lovely distraction for us and for them.
Yeah, it's great that you keep the connection going, it has to be said. One of the lines in High Hopes is, why must a man lose everything to find out what he wants? What's the context for that, or the explanation?
Oh, I mean, that's just a universal line, isn't it? Just like, it's, you know, I suppose you immediately start thinking of your family and you start thinking of everything. It's just that thing of like, why do we have to keep on blowing it over and over and over until you've actually lost? And then you figure it out. It's just that, you know, the Sisyphus idea of you're constantly rolling the rock up and down the hill, you know. And one day you figure it out and you break through to another place. So I guess the line came from, I guess it was personal, but I guess it was also kind of about my dad and about, you know, just, you know, it's just like that whole thing of like, if you make a mistake in your life, then it's a mistake. If you make a mistake twice, it's a mistake twice. But when you learn from it, it becomes a lesson. And unfortunately, some people just keep on making the mistake and then the mistake and then the mistake. And then occasionally, you know, you have a breakthrough and you sort of get to the next spot. And I suppose at the time I was having whatever version of my own kind of breakthrough was going on, that line fell out. So, it's.
How do you mean about your dad?
Just like, you know, the gargle and, you know, just never been able to quite get it together. You know what I mean? God bless him, he's dead now, 3 years. But just never quite being able to kind of climb out of the hole of drinking. Like, just a classic Irish emotional, classic Irish, it's very easy to say that. That's probably not true. But just, you know, shut down emotionally, gargling, you know, never like love to sing but couldn't talk. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You had a kind of a run with the booze yourself too, didn't you?
Ah, sure. Yeah, I mean, I do. And right now I'm not drinking. And for me, it's just like, it's not like I'm not a... I just sort of feel like it doesn't quite suit me right now. Do you know what I mean? And you kind of have to go with where you are in the moment. A run with the booze, yeah. I mean, yes, absolutely. Yeah, you know, I don't want to deny Anne that
that could come back at you.
Exactly.
Somebody bringing in and saying whatever is inappropriate.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, you, as I say, it's been an interesting week for you, and you were on the US NBC TV. Now, I gather you don't want to make a big fuss of it, but by God, just pick up awards, don't you?
It's been an amazing run for once, and for all of that. Well, the reason I went on Parenthood was because the idea of releasing the song was to give the money for the song to breast cancer awareness, and so that was and cancer research. So it isn't something that I'd kind of naturally gravitate towards, to be honest.
Describe what it is for people. Parenthood.
Parenthood is a TV. Well, it's just a TV show about, I guess,
parenting.
The joys and woes of being a parent. But it's a really nice show, and I've watched a few episodes, and I really like it, and I like the people involved. And when I was asked to do it, I was like, well, okay, I'd be more than happy to come in. I was playing myself, the idea is that I'm passing through town. I've got, you know, and I need to record a song, and so the guy has a recording studio and he records me. I play a very small part in it, and it goes by very quick. But the idea, you know, behind wanting to do it was to raise awareness. I have a good friend in New York. I wrote a couple of songs for him, but you know, who's been through the chemo battle twice, and you know, right now he's been re-diagnosed, and it's just one of those things. When it's close to your life. My dad died of lung cancer, you know, so it's just wanting to do something with, because it's so easy to fall into, just being recognized for this or that or the other, and just pulling all the attention onto yourself or whatever. But just if you can draw attention to something else, then it's worthwhile.
Right. Anyway, the nomination this week was for a Grammy. You were talking to us on the phone, I think it was, the last time.
Yeah.
The rehearsals were on for the musical.
Yeah.
And you were worried about it going on stage initially.
Yeah, I was, because only because Once was just this very simple story, and when it did really well, we couldn't have been happier. I mean, it meant so much for John as a director. It meant so much for myself and Marquetta as musicians. Suddenly it was like I had a massive breakthrough in terms of audiences and people hearing my music. So it was a total blessing, you know. But then just when I heard it was going to the stage, I just remember thinking, God, I really hope they don't blow it. That was the only thing.
Yeah.
Hope it doesn't turn into a big ham up, you know, everybody's, you know. I could just kind of imagine falling slowly. And it was like, I was like just horrified by the idea. But then they got Enda Walsh involved in the writing of it. And I was like, oh, wow, there's a move. You know, that was very smart. And then, you know, John Tiffany coming on board, and I just suddenly, and I remember meeting the lads, and they were like, look, we know that you're totally freaked out about this, but we promise you. Because, you know, I guess the only power I had was that I'd written the songs. And so the only thing I could sort of say was, I'm not into this. And then it kind of would be done, or else they would kind of go ahead and do it anyway, but they'd work out some, you know.
Yeah.
So So, you know, it went ahead and I remember spending time with the actors and sort of talking and advising the lead guy, Steve, to go and busk, which he did. He took a car around America and he busked in every town, which was great. And just to sort of get in touch with what the thing is, instead of it being a kind of a musical thing, like, really, don't be afraid to get real quiet, you know, because that'll... You know, we were just talking about the whole dynamic of when you sing quietly, people come in. People often have this idea that when you sing loud, you get people's attention. But actually, oftentimes, getting people's attention means singing quieter. So people will come in and listen. And so we were discussing all that stuff, just, you know, just musician stuff. And Damien, I remember my friend Damien Royce came in and he was very helpful too with everybody, you know, about singing the songs. And we just basically played a lot of music together, myself and the lads in the cast and Marquetta as well. The only thing, I they did really well and it won a bunch of Tonys and,
Eight Tonys.
Which is amazing. But at that stage, for me personally, it was like, it was theirs then. We had done our work. We had basically stepped in, spent a little bit of time with them. And when they had that success, I remember kind of feeling like, that's amazing. But I couldn't feel any ownership over it myself at all, only to sort of say, well done, everyone, you know, fair play to you. And this...
Well,
now,
it was your music.
Well, yeah, but, you know, but it's, you know, at a certain point, you have to kind of sort of step away and allow them to, you know, because it's like 5 or 6, 7 years ago now for us.
Yeah.
So, you know, in your life, it's important to do your work and, you know, and get on with it and move on and go forward. And, you know, I've made... a few records since then. So,
yeah.
So, you know, I'm, you always, as a musician or an artist, I guess you're always where your latest songs are, you know. So I'm very happy for them. Now, they got a Grammy nomination this week and that's amazing and fair play to them. But again, for me, my attitude too is, well done, lads. It's yours now. You know, you own it. So go get it. So I'm delighted for them, you know. I mean, and for me, it's just, I made a record this year and I'm out touring it and I'm playing my music and delighted to be able to look over my shoulder and see that the music, these songs that we've created for this film, are having a whole life of their own.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, you found it difficult, you said, the last time you were in with this, to kind of come to terms with the concept of success and to, as it were, take ownership of that feeling of success. But I see you took time off and you went to the States, or you went to New York,
yeah,
and you got an energy and a freedom there.
Well, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it was exclusive. I mean, I could have took time off here and got the same thing, but just it was nice to just go to a place where you're not... I mean, I don't want to, you know, not where you're anonymous, but where you're basically part of an ocean of energy that's kind of flowing in every direction. New York's a great town because you can go there and you can sort of become you can be totally anonymous and you can totally just stay in your flat and read and knuckle down and get to the work, you know, and then you can just get totally involved in all the distractions and go out on a bender for a couple of weeks. And, you know, in Ireland, I sort of feel like there was a kind of a distraction for me in Ireland with the gargle, you know, because everything here is designed around the pub. So, you know, if you've seen all the latest films, you know, if you've gone to the cinema and you've seen, there's only so much that you can kind of do in the city, you know, and I love company. So I do enjoy going hanging out with my mates, but I find that in New York, I've got, you know, Ezra, my mate, Ezra is a carpenter and he builds bicycles. And I find that I can go with him and hang out for days with him, but like building joints, you know, and doing mortise tenons. And, you know, and for me, that was just getting out of Dublin was important, you know, because, you know, Dublin's a wonderful, wonderful place. But man, you can fall into a hole sometimes, you know, in your hometown, any hometown.
Yeah, perhaps one has to go away to actually judge just how much we do organise our lives around pubs and booze.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's the Vintners Association have a lot to answer for in this country. I mean, I just feel like this kind of the stereotype of what is Irish around the world is really, it's kind of sad, because you notice when you go to other countries, people, you know, you go to Italy or whatever and they drink wine and they drink, you know, and the Czechs drink and, you know, but the Irish kind of have a morbid relationship with the car. Like, it's just pouring fuel on the fire, you know, or dulling ourselves down. It's a very, our relationship with Garrigle is definitely suspect. And I love the idea of being able to go out and have a couple of points. But, you know, you go out and it's kind of, unless you've got a very, very strong personality, which I oftentimes don't when it comes to hanging out with my mates, you know, you don't go out and have 2 points. You go out and you have eight, you know, and then you're, and then the whole, for me, the whole next day is gone. And then it's just, and what you find is that before you know it, months have gone by and you're just, and you've had this time off, but where did it go? You spent the whole time kind of hungover, you know, in that state.
The caller was on to say, tell Glenn Ballymun Kickhams play Portlaoise in the Leinster GAA county final tomorrow.
Ah, nice one. Come on, the Mun.
Glenn is a great ambassador for Ballymun, and we're very proud that he's a past pupil of our school, Holy Spirit BNS. He's a hero to our pupils and very good to us in the school. The day of filming the High Hope video in the school was magical, and we had an amazing experience with him in Vicar Street. That's from Carl, who's a teacher in Ballymun. You mentioned him before in the programme. It was Frank Byrne.
Frankie, yeah.
Teacher in Ballymun.
Yeah.
He's on the video.
Yeah.
It was he who told you, advised you, to leave school at 13. It's pretty unusual for a teacher.
Well, I don't want to get him into trouble. He didn't
I don't want to get him into trouble either.
He didn't advise me. What he did was, like, I was in a good class in the school. I wasn't in the best class, but I was in a pretty good class, you know. And Frankie, I used to go down to Frankie's office quite a bit because you know, just messing and, you know, being one of those clowns in school, you know, in the classroom, and as well, just not really doing my homework and not attending school a lot. And there were many reasons for that. But one of them being that I had discovered music and it was just all I cared about. And so I was playing my guitar as much as I could. I was in my bedroom the whole time. I'd stopped hanging out with all my mates. I just became a loner. It was just me and Dylan, you know, listening to Bob Dylan records over and over and trying to learn them. And then I remember I had, you know, I had kind of thought about busking. I had thought about, we had never been to Grafton Street. Like, we had never been over there. I went to Georgia Street once to buy a football. I remember when I was a kid. And it was like, the south side was like this. My ma wouldn't go over there. My ma had this whole thing about the south side. No, not going over there. Don't like. And she used to say, like, whenever I cross that bridge, I get insecure. And I never knew what she meant. And so like, for me as a young fella, when I did talk to Frankie about music, because Frankie was like, man, you know so much about Dylan, you know, and you're really kind of encyclopedic about certain things, but other things you've just, you know, why don't you? And he had this advice. He said, why don't you go out and start at the very bottom? You love music and it's something you're really passionate about. Go out and start at the very bottom rung, play a bit of music on, you know, on the street, go into Henry Street or whatever, play a bit of music. And if after a year or even a few months it doesn't suit you and you're not, you know, it doesn't work for you, come back to me. I'll figure out a way of getting you back into the school. We'll say nothing. It was all very, you know, and I couldn't believe the gift he was offering. He's like, he was basically offering me.
Great guy. What a great thing to do.
It was very, like, just like, and Frankie, if you're listening, thanks a million, because he's a, you know, he's an amazing man. But so I went, but I couldn't go to Henry Street because my ma sold fruit on Moore Street. So I knew all the women on Henry Street and Moore Street. And my granny was also a street seller there. So I couldn't go there because everyone knew me. Because I grew up selling Starlights and Bangers and fireworks.
Cheeky Charlies.
All of that stuff, you know, on Moore Street when I went, because that was our Halloween. That was, you know, that was what we did at Christmas as well, selling the Christmas decorations. But so I went to Grafton Street, which was an absolute...
A foray into, like, a foreign country.
I might as well have been going to New York, honestly. And I went over and I didn't have the guts for Grafton Street the first day. So I went to that laneway in between Powers Court and Grafton Street, where Mary now busks, Mary Begley. And Mary was there the day I went out, and she's amazing. And I went out and I stood in the laneway and I played a song, a Bob Dylan song, Just Like a Woman, I remember. And someone threw 20 pence into me box. I immediately closed my box, put my guitar on my back, went over to the Mayfair Grill on O'Connell Street because I couldn't wait to get to the north side. Don't ask me why. Had a cup of tea, and I remember thinking, This was the first cup of tea I bought out of my own earnings, through music, through my art. I had this kind of epiphany of like, this is the beginning of a whole life. And I went out the next day, the next day, the next day, and then did it till I was 18, pretty much straight every day.
Do you make a good living busking?
You know, you can, but the way I was doing it was just a classic guy and a guitar and Bob Dylan songs and Van Morrison and maybe one or two of my own. Here's the thing that I never busked for money. I always did it to get, you know, like I lived at home, so my ma was taking care of me. I was like, you know, I was in a good spot, and so I would always make money for my dinner and for, you know, my lunch or whatever, and maybe a cup of tea or whatever. And then I didn't really drink then. And if I went out busking with my mates, because then I met Mick Christopher, and Mick Christopher was 15, and I was 15, and he was in school, and he couldn't understand how here's this young fella who never goes to school, you know. And then I remember telling him where I was from, and he was from Clondalkin, and then we started busking together on the weekends, and then that became a thing, and we became a kind of a band, and we could make money playing as a group of us, because, you know, the more guitars there were, the more voices there were, the more sound you could make. But here's the thing, here's the thing with busking. If you needed the money, I always found that if you needed it, or if you were kind of a bit desperate, or you weren't right, your energy wasn't right with it, you didn't make any money at all.
Really?
And the days you went out and you were in good form and you were just doing it for the fun of doing it, you made money. So you couldn't trick it. You know, it was very, very honest. And, you know, and because the thing with busking is you're getting your reviews right away. People either throw money in your case or they don't.
Yeah.
And so if you're standing there and you're not quite feeling it, people aren't quite hearing it. And if you're feeling it, they are.
You worked with Simon at one stage, didn't you?
Yeah, I was volunteering with Simon, with me mate Jimmy, on North Frederick Street. I think it was North Frederick Street. Yeah, it was the old fire station over North Frederick Street. And that was something I was doing a couple of nights a week with him, and just loved it. Absolutely loved it. And then I remember through that experience, Jimmy decided, because Jimmy's got a great energy, decided to try to set up a shelter for kids between 16 and 30. Because at the time, Simon was only really dealing with people above 30 years old. 35, actually. And so we tried to set up a shelter, and then we went out and we did a load of, you know, I remember we did gigs, and we did one of those sleep outs, you know, not eating for 48 hours. And then we did this thing, myself and him, we did it ourselves privately. Well, we went out and we became homeless for 2 weeks. And we did it just to experience. We couldn't experience what it was like emotionally, but we could experience what it was like physically. And I remember going out and we spent 2 weeks sleeping on the buses in Cunningham Road Station, meeting the prostitutes down on the quays down towards Houston, and they would give us blankets. They were amazing people, and getting involved in the soup run, and we would, you know, even though we had worked in Simon, we were just going on the soup run to sort of experience it, and it was one of the most forming fortnights of my whole life. I remember sort of getting a real sense of what it was about. And we were basically gathering money for the shelter, and then of course one of the lads who we were working with, who was an alco, you know, a lot of the guys were AA guys, and took off with all the money, went on a bender, and I think it was like 24 grand we'd managed to gather up, and he went off. And, but, like, you know, God bless him, he's passed on now. But
what is it like, you know, do you feel invisible? It must be blooming cold at night and in the rain. I've seen people in doorways in the rain. And you just wonder, how can people survive it?
Well, the big thing for me and him, I mean, we were together now, so we were being really light on ourselves. We were together. We were two mates, and we also had homes to go to. Did we want to chicken out at any point?
Yeah.
You know. So
yeah.
Please don't get me wrong. I would never want to say that I experienced homelessness for 2 weeks. We experienced the discomfort of it physically, but the thing that was really interesting was passing the hours of the day. You wake up at dawn because it's freezing. And you're just up for the day, and you walk Dublin, you just tramp around, and you're going to all, say, let's walk over to Donnybrook. You walk over to Donnybrook, let's head into town. And you go into the soup kitchens, and you get to know all the soup kitchens. And we were going around and getting, and we were eating all right, you know, like you could, there was food. But once it went sort of 6 o'clock, the only thing between 6 o'clock and the next morning was the soup run, which was down at Euston Station. the Simon would come, and they still do it. They do it every, they do it 365 days a year. They go out, sandwiches and soup every night at 10 o'clock. And so we were going and meeting them. But if you missed them, man, you were, yeah, you know, you were waiting till the morning. But it was an amazing experience, and it really gave me an appreciation. And because we met a lot of people, and there's just the other thing, you know, street people know street people. And that was something I learned through busking, is that once you stay on the street long enough, you begin to see it at a different level. You begin to notice that, you begin to notice the pickpockets. They give you the odd nod because they're pickpocketing the people that are watching your music.
Right.
And you don't want the people watching your music getting pickpocketed. So it's a weird relationship you've got with them. You don't, you know, and then you get to know the drug squad because you see them walking up and down, and you get, you know, and you see the junkies, and you see the lads going in who are robbing in the shops. And it kind of becomes a bit of a, you start to notice a whole other society going on.
Yeah.
And the same with going out and skippering, which is sleeping on the street. You begin to notice some of the lads, and some of them were lovely, wise men who kind of gave us lovely advice, and others were just dangerous, you know.
Yeah.
You never knew what kind of side you were going to get, and others were proper schizophrenic. And well, schizophrenic's an interesting word. I don't want to use that because there's a lot of interesting.
No, it also gives offence. I was quoting somebody else saying it, yeah.
Just because, you know, schizophrenia is definitely something that's only recently been being sort of reinvestigated. You know, I just saw a lovely thing about this woman hearing voices, and it was a fascinating, you know, being diagnosed with schizophrenia. But anyway, that's a whole other conversation, but something I'd love to talk about another time.
Tell me, how's your ma coping with all of this?
My ma's great. I brought her out, actually, because, like I said, Eddie's tour finished down in Florida. And so I said, you know, my cousin's a huge Pearl Jam fan. So I said, right, I'll get him down and I'll get my ma down. And so they came down and they spent a few, my niece came down as well. And she sang with me one of the nights. She was great, Amy. And we just, you know, I got, you know, got to put her in a hotel, and in a, because my ma's into all that, the glamour, you know, Miami. So I got to
Why
put
not?
Her in a hotel. Well, yeah. Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, and so she got to put her in a hotel down there, and to have her to walk on the beach with her and all, and she was delighted because, you know, weather's getting cold here, and she's just retired, so she's got a lot more time in her hands. So it feels that's one of the great joys to me of making a few quid and being able to and touring and being able to sort of call me man and say, do you want to come out? Because, you know, life's about making memories. That's really, you know, the thing I've realized in the last few years, you know, working and touring, and, you know, if you can, you know, it's just about making memories. And all this thing about Christmas, you know, I hear, you know, there was a thing on the television when we were in the States about, you know, Black Friday, whatever it's called, where people were beating each other up trying to get to the bargains in the shops. And that just makes you realise that people are missing the point completely. Christmas is about hanging out with your family and spending. You know, the best gift you can give anyone is your energy, your time. So if it's a matter of sitting down and drawing like drawing the Christmas card, that means so much more than going into Brown Thomas and spending 200 quid on something that sparkles and shines, you know, because it becomes a vulgar display of your wealth. And the funny thing is, it's always the working class that spend the most money, because they want to show how, you know, look at all you have to do is look at communions and confirmations. I mean, they go out and they mortgage the house to get your to have you looking gorgeous, you know, on the day. Whereas it's really not about that. It's just about being presentable and on Christmas giving your time to your family.
Hi, Marion. My husband Pat and I are just back from Austin, Texas, and we saw Glenn do a gig there. He was absolutely fantastic. I've never seen such energy. I recommend everyone to go and see him. You're coming back here as well. I mean, you're not just doing foreign gigs.
No, I'm playing two nights in Vicar Street at the end of the month.
Mm. It's a terrific venue, it has to be said.
That's great.
Listen, I'm going to have to take a break, and then you can consider whether or not you might pick that yoke up for us. I'll just take a break right now.
1850 715 150.
Welcome back to the programme. Well, as you know, Glenn Hansard is in with us this morning. Caller was on to say Glenn has always been a gentleman, kind of heart and generous of spirit. It's good to see that sometimes the good guys win. From Waterford, Glenn is such an inspiration to people, an amazing talent who made it against the odds through passion and determination. Proud to be Irish when I listen to people like Glenn, and much more besides. Are you going to give us a few bars?
So this is the song, High Hope, that we made the video for.
working on a high hope. And if it all works out, you might just see me or hear from me in a while. I'm gonna make it cross this tightrope. Then I'm coming for my prize. No more I'll be waiting round while life just passes by. Maybe when our hearts are realigned, maybe when we've both had some time, I'm gonna see you there. I'm gonna see you there, there. Well, we can be natural there. Cause I've been living in a half life, not sure which way to turn. Why must a man lose everything to find out what he wants? But I'm gonna wait until it feels right. And when that time has come, wild horses won't keep me back from where you've up and gone. Maybe when we're both old and wise, maybe when our hearts have had some time, I'm gonna see you there. I'm gonna see you there, there. But we can't be natural.
So much. That was just a treat, an absolute treat. Now, Claire was on to say she saw once in New York, excuse me, last month, and it was amazing. Never experienced a show like it. The audience reaction was just unreal. So that's fantastic. You'll be busking in Grafton Street again.
Yeah, yeah. I think on Christmas Eve, well, I'll be doing it anyway. I'll call a few mates and see maybe they'll be up for it too.
Listen, Glenn, as always, thank you very, very much indeed
thank
for coming
you.
In.
Thanks,
and continued success to you.
Thank you.
OK, ciao.
1850 715 150.